Hogsett for mayor, the announcement that was hard to ignore. Was it an attempt at humor or an attack on the mayor? A misguided document goes public in Carmel. The Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey looks at pre-K, crime, and the governor's approval rating. That plus a high-priced hot pocket and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 14, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Democrat Joe Hogsett staged a big campaign rollout. He announced his candidacy for mayor of Indianapolis with a formal speech at King Park, complete with an introduction by former Senator Evan Bayh. Meantime, Democrat State Representative Ed Delaney, who made a low-key announcement months ago, is staying in the race. Here's Hogsett, followed by Delaney.
Indianapolis must do better. But in order for that to happen, all of us must do better for Indianapolis.
I'm a guy that's out here to talk about the issues, and the issues are we don't have any money for roads, we don't have any money to have a full-size police department, and we're about to spend $600 million on a new jail. There's something wrong with this picture.
Are the Democrats headed toward a divisive primary? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, will both of those candidates be in the race next May?
I think that's a real possibility, and it would be a spirited primary race. And if it was close and they both did stay in it, then it would become a very expensive primary race in a hurry, because if both gentlemen feel like they have a chance to win, they are both fighters. Ed Delaney is one of the best campaigners I've seen on the Democrat Party. I know he represents my district, so I know, or at least he used to. I think he still does.
Is your sidewalk
should be better after this commercial.
He will for Mike.
But no, seriously, he's a tough campaigner, and if this thing turns into a real race, it could be very expensive and divisive.
What would cause one or the other candidate to get out before May?
Well, we don't even know that this is the full field yet. You know, it's a long time before the May primary, and we don't even know who the Republican is. So, I mean, there are lots of factors that could weigh into this lots of different ways. I have my candidate. I don't see anything divisive about that at all.
I'm pretty clear on that. We've gone a little over a week now, and Republicans are still hanging.
Republicans need to get their field put together pretty soon, and there's been a lot of names that have been discussed, and I'm sure that they'll come to the post. But a divisive primary is only difficult for the Democrats if there's a good Republican candidate in the offing or in the wings. We don't know what's going to happen on the Republican side. So as someone who is not a political pro, I'm all for primaries because I think it makes for a better vetting process and more interesting race.
And don't you love, party officials will always champion whatever situation they have.
Right.
We've heard it on this round table as well. If you have a contested primary, thank goodness.
So what's your point?
My point is to say thank goodness, because now these people will be battle tested. Yeah. They'll be hardened.
It'll energize the base.
Yeah. But if you don't have one and you're
right.
a county chair or a state chair, whew, thank goodness we can be unified heading into the election. So clearly, I think Democratic Party as a whole would prefer to have a unified, I mean, if you put administered truth serum. But this will be a good, I think, vigorous debate, I would hope, on issues. And it'll be interesting, as John says, to watch. I mean, as a student of politics, it's fun to watch good, qualified candidates go at it.
A week ago, Mike, you said Deborah Daniels was a potential candidate for mayor of Indianapolis. She's now been named managing partner at the law firm Krieg DeVault.
Was elected yesterday as a managing partner. Congratulations to her. Pretty sure it takes her out of the race.
Exactly.
Although she would have been a great candidate because she clearly would have offset some of what some
of these. She was a U.S. attorney, like Joe Hogsett, right, and some name ID that she could get from her brother, right, with a little help, maybe.
Which would offset some of Ed Delaney's.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I've been doing a little homework this week. Jim Merritt seriously is looking at the state center. Murray Clark is more serious about this than I thought he was. He's really taking a look at this now. And there may be others before it's over. But both of those gentlemen, if either of them got in, they would be well-funded and would be excellent campaigners. So we could have a very spirited mayor's race.
Are you saying the Republicans want a contested primary?
Yes. That's what Ann and I were laughing about, because both of us have given
All right, a consultant apologized this week for a document that suggested that Carmel Mayor Jim Brainerd should be castrated. The apology comes from Mike Shaver of Wabash Scientific. The document was included in an analysis Shaver performed on the Carmel Redevelopment Commission debt obligations. It was sent by the clerk treasurer to members of the city council. It contains a flow chart suggesting that if the city can't pay off its debt, the best solution is to, quote, shoot council, castrate mayor, put head between legs, kiss you-know-what goodbye. The flowchart was written by City Council President Eric Seidensticker, who said it was meant as a joke and never intended to be released to the public. Brainerd called it regrettable and immature. Ann Delaney, is that a symptom of bigger problems in Carmel?
I think that's just a symptom of what it is. You know, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Somebody's being funny and doesn't realize that when he puts it in email, he puts it out into the entire world, okay? Now, I'm sure he regrets it. I'm sure he's going to say what he said is that it was a mistake, never meant for public consumption, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it is what it is.
In the meantime, though, one of the things we're seeing up there, we always hear about there are no Democrats in Carmel. There's only one party, or there are two parties, and it's the people who are with Mayor Brainerd and those who are against him.
Well, you know, we've talked about this 100 times on the show. Another example, like Ann just said, of how many times are these politicians going to have to do this before they learn it? You can't put something on the internet, put it out to anybody, and not think it's going to be sent on to somebody else. You can't control this thing. Once the genie's out of the bottle, it's out of the bottle. But here's the troubling part of this particular one for me. If this was a Carmel High School student who put this out suggesting that they shoot the council and castrate the mayor, they'd be arresting whatever that student name was and you know, bringing them out and really calling them out on something like this. But we're trying to laugh this off like it's just some big joke. Well, you know, at some point these things no longer tend to be funny.
Shaver fell on the sword here. Was that necessary?
I think a lot of people are trying to scramble to put the best face on a very awkward situation. Should he have done that? I don't know. I mean, he's as a vendor, as a contractor for the city. I presume that's an added complication to this because, you know, when that contract, I don't know what the terms of the agreement are or the duration, but at some point that'll come up, and I presume the council will approve whatever work he's doing for the project, additional consultancy work, and the mayor, and this issue will come up again, undoubtedly.
Think there'll be any lasting effects from this?
There could be, because, you know, while it is, could be construed as being a mistake or funny, it's not funny, and it was put there purposefully, even if it wasn't meant for consumption, and it's delivering a message that obviously somebody feels serious about. I think there will be lasting consequences, and I have one description for it, two words, stupid.
Lasting now. Consequences may be the no more use of email.
Yeah, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, how would you describe the call to castrate Mayor Brainerd? Your choices are A, funny, B, embarrassing, C, cruel, or D, no big deal. Last week's question was, how long will Republican supermajorities stay in place in the Indiana General Assembly? 35% said 2 years, 44% said 2 to 8 years, 21% said 10 years or more. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Governor Mike Pence is halfway through his first term. And the result of the Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey shows that most Hoosiers think he's doing a good job. The governor's approval rating is 62%, just 24% disapprove of the job he's done. The Hoosier survey also found that more people have heard good things about Pence than any other potential GOP candidate for president in 2016. More than half said there is some chance they would vote for Pence for president. John Katzenberger. Is that a surprising result?
It's a little higher than I would have expected it to be, although he hasn't really had a bruising battle with the legislature or any major scandals erupt. He's had his fights with the Department of Education, those kinds of things. But still, 62% 2 years into his term is pretty good momentum.
And the president talk doesn't seem to be a problem for him. Steve Forbes was in town this week and said that he ought to run for president.
Well, I don't think it certainly has not proved to be a problem for him at this point. And in fact, as we've discussed on this show before, I think he, as was the case with his predecessor, Mitch Daniels, I don't think they're overly eager to stifle that kind of conversation because of there's the actual human dynamic of you like when people suggest you'd be a good president. I think we'll stipulate that. But then also just the attention that the notion that correct or incorrect, that you have a greater seat at the table of policy formulation if you're in a position operating from a position of national prominence.
Okay. He got elected with less than 50% of the vote. So to be above 60 at this point is an accomplishment.
Very rapid rise, and I think a good part of that has to do with the fact that he had two very successful legislative sessions. His first two sessions, he passed a lot of important legislation, and that made a difference. He's well-liked, and the numbers are going up, and that's a positive. On the presidential thing, it's not a surprise to me that most Hoosiers would say that they've not heard much about the other candidates because really all they've heard here is the speculation about Mike Pence. So
right behind him in that poll was Rand Paul.
Well, I'm sure that's probably true because that's the only other name that you hear a lot about in this particular area. But Mike Pence is really got quite a future ahead of him if he wants it to be that way. I think he's going to run for governor again. I really do. But I think you make yourself available in case lightning would hit and the Republicans don't come up with a candidate. You never know. You could get into this thing late in this kind of environment and still make a difference.
And if everybody's talking about you and encouraging you to run for president, that makes you a better gubernatorial candidate.
You think?
That's my guess.
I don't know. I mean, he's got to make a decision because he can't run for both. So he's either not going to run for governor and run for president, or he's going to run for president.
And he said he'll make a decision after the 2015
And, in terms of the approval rating, it certainly is a good approval rating. But, it's when you start thinking about the decisions that he's made in this spectacularly successful 2 years he's had, turning down the expansion of Medicaid and turning down the federal funds for preschool and making war and discriminating against homosexuals, all of those things in together with him, I don't think that approval rating is going to stay that high by any means.
He puts all of his
eggs in the basket of having a balanced budget. Okay, that's fine, but if you're not properly funding education, if you're not repairing the roads and doing all the things.
So can we put you in the 14% of undecideds?
I would hesitate to have you put me anyplace, Mike.
One thing, just an observation, the Rand Paul, I wouldn't make much of that because you look at 15, 20% perhaps of the sample are in media markets where Rand Paul is effectively a local politician
down along the Ohio River.
With Kentucky. So I that doesn't surprise me alone.
Still with the poll, the Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey found widespread support for state funding for pre-kindergarten classes. 82% support the idea of expanding pre-K so that it's available to all students. Just 15% oppose the idea. An estimated 40,000 kids have no access to pre-K. And the Hoosier survey found that 68% said they would favor an increase in education spending by 3% to cover the cost of textbooks statewide for all public school students. Just 29% are opposed. Here's Ball State Professor Joe Losco.
Education is an area where the public is willing to spend more, even though we also want to make sure we have enough of a reserve for a rainy day.
John Schwannis, which is more likely, pre-K funding or free textbooks?
I think there is clearly a move toward funding kindergarten and pre-kindergarten instruction.
Not in 2015.
Not in 2015, but look at the research, look at the data. You have people from both parties. I mean, there aren't many issues anymore.
Except in the governor's mind.
I can count maybe on one hand the issues where there really is a lot of agreement, generally speaking. You're talking about funding of it. But generally speaking about the need for it.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
if you really want to get into that, though, Jim, this is...
There's not general agreement in the Republican Party on climate change, on gay marriage,
am I shocked that 85% of Hoosiers want... No, because...
On evolution?
No, I'm saying if you look... It's the wording of the question. If you say, do you want this or whatever else that is not going to happen because of the funding here, if you get into the nitty-gritty of funding and into the weeds, then that number drops. But otherwise, you're basically asking, do you believe in apple pie and motherhood?
I think what Ann is suggesting, John Ketchenberger, is that the Republicans are out of step with the public. Would you agree with that?
I think there are people within the Republican Party who are not thrilled about pre-K particularly. But I do think the problem here is the price tag. When the legislature looks at this, these are two very high-priced items. You're not going to do both. You're going to do one or the other. And I wouldn't be surprised if neither gets the money because the additional funding that looks like it's going to be available probably go into the formula in some fashion.
Right. I mean, to get free textbooks, you have to increase the formula by 3%. I think just increasing the formula by 3% would make a lot of educators happy without paying for the textbooks.
Yeah, I understand.
So you're talking 6% to
pay. Right. But on the other hand, I have always been offended by the notion. I mean, if you can afford to pay for the textbooks, great. But there are a lot of parents that can't afford to pay for the textbooks. And the idea that you have to pay for textbooks to send your child to a public facility is,
it's not
I
a
think
free
offensive.
Education.
It's not a free education.
Right.
But that issue aside, the preschool issue, I think, is of primary importance. We turned down all that money, $80 million of that money, to start preschool and really jumpstart it. We're going to wait till every other state has kindergarten. We don't even have mandatory kindergarten in Indiana. I'm surprised we have to go, beyond the sixth grade here at the rate we're going.
Will the governor catch up to this public opinion at some point?
Well, first of all, the governor's ahead of public opinion when it comes to education. I don't know that anybody could say that he's out of sync or the Republicans are out of sync when you have super majorities in both houses of the legislature, every statewide office. We must be in sync with somebody out there.
Except state school
they
superintendent.
They keep voting for
Except
us.
State school superintendent.
Right. And I'm predicting right now she'll be a short timer.
Her approval rating in this poll is 48%.
48%. So she's pretty much, she's under
50%. The General Assembly's approval rating is 57. That kind of surprised me.
Let me tell you this.
It's because they don't know them.
Well, let me tell you this. What I love about this is that both Speaker Bosma, President Pro Tem Long, and Mike Pence have already said that education and education funding is a priority for this session of the legislature. So you're going to see an increase in spending if the revenue's there and everybody's confidence is going to be there. And I think it will go into the formula. I think you're probably more likely to see the rising tide to go to all the systems rather than to pick and choose. There's going to be some attempt to even out the formula so that there's not such discrepancy, $9,500 per student in one place and $4,500 per student in another. those are the things that they're going to concentrate on, and they're going to get it done this session.
And what they're going to do is they're going to take money from the poorer school districts so that they can fund the Taj Mahals that have been built in the suburbs out there where they don't want their property taxes to go up. The problem with this whole thing is we haven't even restored the funding to where it was in 2008. Okay, you can say that education is a priority.
Every state in the country,
put the money
every state in the country cut education a lot worse than Indiana did. During
but you
that
also
period.
Put in vouchers.
So don't give
you
us that.
You also put in vouchers.
John,
there,
do you know
you
if this pre-K instruction would adhere to the Common Core? I mean, because that could clearly affect the numbers if you want to play with the way these numbers turn out. It's all in the wording of the question, as it always is.
Moving on, a majority of the 600 people surveyed for this year's Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey say that reducing crime should be one of the state's top priorities. In an eye-catching result, jobs remain number one among those surveyed, but 69% chose addressing crime as the second top priority. The crime issue leapfrogged school improvements. Ball State professor Ray Sheely.
We were somewhat surprised at the high level of concern about violent crime in Indiana.
And that concern is highest in central Indiana. Ann Delaney, is it warranted?
Oh, it's clearly warranted. When you look at the statistics for Indianapolis and central Indiana, it's clearly warranted. And when you talk about things like that, the disconnect between understanding that success in school, starting with pre-K and on up, reduces the tendency to commit violent crimes is incredible to me. And on top of that, our priorities are mixed up. We're talking about doing something about crime. Okay, fine. We're going to build a Taj Mahal jail at $600 million when we don't have enough police on the streets. What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, I saw a study this week that said that for every dollar that's invested in pre-K, you could save as much as $17 down the road in things like social service costs, prison costs. That's tough for politicians because you don't see the benefits
because
until
people want instant results,
right?
And they want instant results on all of this. This is an example. In fact, this is a surprise because every survey that I can remember for the last 40 years that I've been involved in politics, government's always been jobs and education. It's either been one or the other, first and second. For this to go to second is something serious that people are going to have to take notice of. And I will say this, the speaker, again, this is something that they put in their list of about things that they want
public
to address.
Public safety
session, which tells me that they're feeling this too. And that's good for everybody, that if they're paying attention and they're going to try to deal with it. But the problem you got with this stuff is legislating crime is a tough, tough thing to do because everybody's got an opinion on how to do it, and there's no inexpensive way of doing it. And it starts with all the things we've talked about, education and everything else. And so, they're going to deal with it this time, but you can't do it all at once.
And it's going to be the biggest issue in the race for mayor next year.
Oh, well, I mean, this is every issue when you ask what's important, there's a certain volatility. That's the one this year because you've had high-profile crimes. There's a fear factor, but it could go down as quickly as it's gone up. Just as, I'd have to go back, I've done no research on this, but I'm thinking that 2 years ago when we had a discussion about the Wish poll, fuel prices was one of the top issues. I don't need to tell you that that's not really a concern for anybody.
Well, the fuel prices have gone down.
That's my point, Ann, is that there are certain issues that are very volatile, and
they'll go
up and down.
John? The surest way to deal with the crime problem is to improve the economy, and there was another report that came out from the Central United Ways of Indiana that showed that while there are about 16% of people in poverty in this state, about 37% of the people in this state are insecure economically, and that is what's driving both the fear of crime and the crime itself. Right. The surest way to eliminate both of those problems is to improve the economy.
Finally, if you sell beer in Indiana, you must sell food. At the Sun King Brewery, they are testing the limits of a state law that requires a bar to have enough food for 25 people. The Sun King menu includes choices like a Hot Pocket for $15 or a cup of noodles, also for $15. Sun King has only sold one Hot Pocket so far, and that was to an employee. Here's owner Clay Robinson.
And if we're going to do anything, we value our alcohol license, and we wanted to do it by the letter of the law. And at the same time, we like to have fun, so we wanted to play around a little with it.
Mike McDaniel, what do you make of that?
Well, I'm calling this, I'm giving this a name. I'm calling this the Ketzenberger strategy. because if Ketzenberger's there and he's drank two growlers, he'll pay $15 for a hot pocket.
No, he won't. He'll be on the floor.
He'll be on the
That's right. I'll be calling the cab.
No, the state law is silly. It's silly, okay? Yeah. And it shows you how silly it is, because you have hundreds of people in that Sun King Brewery. You have to have enough food for 25 people,
yeah.
Okay? It's a silly law. They ought to just repeal it.
Hey, if this thing is shown in, say, the D.C. market or New York, people will be flocking here for that bargain $15 hot dog, because those are East Coast prices. That'd be a bargain. Yeah,
I hear that Jim Gaffigan is going to be the spokesman for Sun King these days.
Could be. You think this will change the law?
No.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.